The following program has been furnished and paid for by Auto Pros Radio Show, and KSCB is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered. Rolling up the doors, the garage is open, and here we go. The Auto Pros Radio Show. And now, here's Robert, Jody, and Lynn, the Auto Pros.
All right, welcome back to Auto Pros Radio Show. Here I'm Robert Gruner with Miss Lynn Beckwith here today.
Howdy, y'all.
Jody's out playing around again. So. Anyway, give us a call, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-KSEB.
And Rogan held through the break. Yeah. Thank you for that, sir.
Let's go back.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
All right. So the high idle problem with the 5.8
right.
F-150.
Right.
Yeah, it. Whenever I'm coming off the highway, it won't slow down. It'll just stay at, cruising speed.
Right.
And I have to brake to stop.
Okay.
It'll just sort of go away randomly, like there's nothing I can do to get it to stop doing that.
And I'll tell you the most common thing that I've seen on that, and I know you've already replaced the throttle position sensor, but what you need to look at is if you have a voltmeter, you need to put it on that green wire coming off that TPS.
I've actually tested the TPS.
Okay,
it
so
is working properly.
So okay, well, so what kind of voltage do you have when you're setting it idle fully warmed up?
I think like I want to say like 4.7.
That's not right.
Third.
Try again.
I don't know.
so you're gonna have three wires on it. One of them's gonna be a 5-volt reference. One's gonna be ground, and then one's your signal going back. Which on those older Fords, always the wire with the green is the one that's the signal going back.
Yeah.
Okay. So at idle, hot, that should be 0.9 volts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 0.9.
Yep.
If what would happen on them is when you would decelerate sometime, that sensor would be skewed or you'd have some kind of something hanging up the linkage, something, and it would be over a volt. If it's over a volt when you let off and coming, it goes into what's called dashpot mode. And what that was back in the day of the carburetor, you used to have a thing on the side called a dashpot so that when you would let off that throttle real quick, that dashpot would hold that throttle open a little bit and then let it come down real slow. Well, on the idle speed control motors like that, when you would come off the freeway, it would first hold it up and let it come down real slow. Well, if the voltage is over a volt, it'll hold it up there and it'll just keep holding it and it'll be
all
high.
Right.
Now, another thing you can check to see is it the idle speed control motor making it run high is at that idle speed control motor, you have two wires. One wire is going to be battery voltage, like if you're running, you'll check it, it'll read 14 volts or 13.8 or whatever your charging voltage is. The other side is being dithered to ground by the PCM. And by that, I mean it's sitting there tapping that wire to ground to open that idle speed control motor to wherever it wants it. And so typically on a clean throttle body, fully warmed up, setting it idle, that side's going to read about 10 volts. If it's reading 8 or 7 volts, then that computer is telling it to open and idle fast for some reason.
Yeah, it is the IAC. I can hear the IAC running, but it also does it just randomly when I'm sitting at a stoplight, too.
Right.
And just when I'm coming off the highway.
And what I would do is I would take that voltmeter, find your green wire on that TPS, and watch that as you drive down the road.
And Rogan, what brand did you buy when you replaced all these parts?
Motorcraft, everything.
Yep. Okay. Oh, that's good.
So if you have a long enough set of leads, you tap into that wire. And you want to make sure, tap into the green wire and just watch that voltage when you're driving it. I mean, every time you come back to idle, it should go to 0.9 every time.
All right.
And if you're coming back to idle and it's hanging over a volt, if it's anywhere over a volt, it's going to hold that throttle. It's going to hold that idle speed up.
And how would I remedy this if this were the issue?
If it's holding up, what I would do then, let's say you do it and you can see, oh, yeah, it's hanging up there. Then I go to the ground circuit on the TPS just to make sure I have a good ground, which on that one should be less I want to say I'd have to look at a diagram to see exactly.
There's three wires coming off.
That's correct.
One's black, one's green, and
right.
one's red.
Right. Red is going to be your 5 volts. Black is your ground. Green is your signal.
Mm-hmm.
And what you'd want to do is make sure that ground wire, I'd have to look at a diagram, but if that wire is grounded through the PCM, you want to see less than a volt on that line. If it's a mechanical ground, you'd want to see less than 50 millivolts, but I'd have to look at a diagram to know for sure how that one was grounded. I can't remember off the top of my head. But you want to watch that TPS voltage first. Just on there.
And if it's grounded well, then he's got a bad TPS.
Then you got a bad TPS. Just because it's a motorcraft don't mean as well. Let me tell you something. I've bought lots of motorcraft mm-hmm. stuff recently that just ain't what motorcrafts used to be. You know?
Yeah, this is the second motorcraft one I put on it. I put a new one on it whenever I change the throttle body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's what you need to watch first is that TPS voltage just to see what is it doing, and that would kind of tell you which way you got to go. If that voltage is perfect, then I would go to that idle speed control motor and watch to see is it dithering it to ground, telling it to speed up.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most challenging things in auto repair these days is bad parts. We're plagued with bad parts.
Yeah, I work on classics as well, and we definitely have that issue, like almost every day, bad parts.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah, the throttle position sensor is grounded back through the engine control module, so you're just looking for less than a volt on that. It should be like a brown and a white wire. And that might be after the connector, because I know coming off the TPS, it's usually like black, red, and orange. Black, red, and green, but then where the actual harness plugs in, it's different colors on that side. And, I mean, looking on this one, it looks like it's a gray and white, and then a green and red, and then like a brown and white or something like that.
I believe so. It's like black and white, and then white and black, and red and white.
Yeah. But usually anything that's got a green stripe in it, on this one, it actually looks like, if I'm looking at the right diagram or the same one on your car, it looks like it should be gray and white. That should be the signal. But you should be able to go to it and check. And one should be 5 volts, one should be less than a volt, and then the other one should be less than a volt also on the ground side.
All right, I'll test the TPS. Yeah.
Like I say, if you can find the one, you know, and the way to find the one that's the sensor wires, of course, plug into it. And if you think it's, you know, if it's showing less than a volt, then just open and close your throttle and see if it goes up and down as you open and close the throttle. Then you know that's the sensor wire.
Mm-hmm.
And then drive it and just watch that voltage when it does that and see what the voltage reads on it.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for the call, Rogan.
Yeah.
Give us a shout back and
let us know how it turns out.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Give us a call, 281-558-5738.
All right, we're going to head out and visit with Art. Art, welcome to Auto Pros Radio.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Is it me? I'm Mike.
Oh, Mike. Okay.
That's good enough. Go ahead.
My mistake. Mike, how are you, sir?
That's okay. I was wondering, not too long ago, I think on your show, I heard y'all mention something about staying away from flushes. Did I hear that right, or... Because on my Ford F-150, it doesn't have a lot of mileage. It's not driven very much. And they told me to do a rear differential flush and a brake line flush, I believe.
Right.
And I thought I had heard y'all say something about staying away from anything that's like a flush or something. So. Can you explain that, or what should I be doing? Should I do this or that, or what?
No, that's a different radio show. So.
Right. You definitely want to have clean fluid and all those components at every opportunity. I typically do them every 30,000 miles.
Right. And let's make one thing clear, because some people use the term flush, and then some of it is like fluid exchange. And, you know, people have this connotation that when you say flush, it's like you're ramming this stuff through there. Which all the BG processes are more of an exchange. You know, we take some out, we put some in. We take some out, we put some in. Where on your differential, of course, on that, if it doesn't have a drain plug on the bottom of the differential, usually you drain it out. Either you do it one of two ways. Either you take the cover off and let it all drain out, Or if you have a driveline machine that's vacuum operated, you take a hose and stick down in there and you suck it all out and then put fresh stuff back in. On the brakes, usually the BG process, the way that works is they have a machine for doing it, and you take the cap off the master cylinder reservoir, suck all the old fluid out, put all fresh fluid in, you put about 11 pounds of pressure on it, and then you go to each wheel and apply vacuum to the bleeder screw and suck the fluid all the way through, you know, and you exchange all the fluid out. And yes, you should do it every 30,000 miles.
Yeah,
or
and if you don't drive that much, do it every couple years.
Yeah, every 2 years.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. I heard it on another program because I thought about y'all on the BG products, and I said, well, those things sound kind of like a flush or, you know, what somebody would like, you know, and so I was thinking, why would they say not to do that?
Yeah.
But anyway, I was just wondering about my mileage if it was about that time anyway. So, well, I'll try to find me a BG dealer.
Mike, what side of town are you on?
The north side. North side.
Well, you're either going to be close to my shop, Beckwith's, out in Humble, or at Green and White up in Spring.
Okay. Where's the Spring? Where's that Spring one at? They're, I'm a little close to that.
Yeah, they're on Spring Cypress Road, so just a little bit east of I-45.
Okay.
Really convenient. Been there for decades. Green and White Auto. At 1020 Spring Cypress Road, you'll be in good hands there. They can help you evaluate. How many miles do you have on your F-150?
27.
Yeah, you're going to qualify for the BG protection plan, too. So you're at a great point to do that. And don't forget about the fuel system. It's time to do a fuel system flush on it also.
Okay.
A service.
All right. Thanks for the info. I appreciate it.
Hey, we appreciate the call.
Give us a call, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-KSUV. Got some open lines. Yeah, I know the show we heard that on. So.
Well, you know.
And you know what? The guy don't know nothing about cars.
You know, the one I hear the most is that people are afraid to flush their transmission or to exchange fluid. And there are, you know, for decades, people did not address the transmission fluid, but the transmissions were simpler, and people only drove their cars for like 80 or 90,000 miles.
Right.
At 80,000 miles, you shopped for a new one, and frequently it went to the junkyard.
Yeah.
And nowadays, we want to get a couple hundred thousand miles out of our vehicles.
Well, you know, I can remember when I first started working on cars back in the early 80s. I mean, it was nothing for a car to need a valve job at 70 or 80,000 miles.
Right.
I mean, like all the time.
Yeah.
And now you rarely see that. Mm-hmm. And as sure as I say that, now we got one in the shop that needs a valve job.
But it is rare. It's rare. And, you know, they're huge investments. We want to get, it's the norm now to get 250, 300,000 miles out of a car with good maintenance.
Oh, yeah. And especially nowadays, like this one that's in the shop, it's a Chevy Trailblazer with a straight six in it. And, you know, to do a valve job on that thing's like $4,000.
Wow.
I mean, it's not cheap. It's super expensive because it's got double overhead cams, all these chains and guides and everything on it that you got to replace. So, I mean, it's very expensive. And, I mean, the car only has like 100,000 miles on it. But apparently it's an inherent problem on that motor because when I looked it up, there's just like tons of confirmed fixes for bad valves.
Right.
Yeah. So, anyway, we're going to take a short break here. You're listening to the Auto Pros Radio Show here on 700 KSEV The Voice. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jody. If you missed part of the show, no worries. Go to autoprosradio.com. If you need some repairs or general maintenance performed to keep your vehicle safely on the road, click on the preferred automotive shops and find a repair shop in your area recommended by Robert, Jody, and Lynn, the Auto Pros. Have a car question during the week? Send us an email at info@autoprosradio.com. And remember to tell your friends about the Auto Pros Radio Show every Saturday, 10 to noon, here on AM 700 KSEV.
BG Products, the number one name in preventative maintenance. Carbon buildup in your engine will reduce your fuel economy, cause engine hesitation, rough idle, and excessive oil consumption. BG Products has you covered for all your fluid maintenance services and fuel system cleaning needs.
They are so confident in the quality of their product, they back it up with a lifetime protection plan. All of our Auto Pros preferred service centers offer the BG services because they work. Find a list of preferred service centers at autoprosradio.com or go to bgfindashop.com to find a BG service center near you. That's BG Products, the number one name in preventative maintenance.
Auto Techtronics, your one-stop automotive service center. A family-owned and operated repair shop that has been in business for 40 years, serving the Katy, Texas, and surrounding areas, providing all types of mechanical and electrical automotive repair work for both import and domestic models with a 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty. Auto Techtronics also performs all the factory scheduled maintenance for your vehicle. Robert Gruner and his staff of technicians pride themselves on taking care of their customers and doing repairs right the first time. Located at 5330 East 5th Street in Old Katy, give them a call, 281-391-7617, and schedule an appointment today. That's 281-391-7617, Auto Techtronics in Katy.
Is your transmission slipping, jerking, or making funny noises? Well, let me recommend the great folks at Gary's Transmission Service. Whether you have a classic car or a late model vehicle, Gary's will diagnose your problem and let you know if it's a transmission problem or something else that makes it feel like a transmission problem. The experts at Gary's Transmissions are trained in today's most complex transmissions for both foreign and domestic. All transmission rebuilds come with a local 2-year, 24,000-mile parts and labor warranty, including annual preventive maintenance service at no charge during the warranty period. Quality transmission repairs done right. 281-347-8888. Gary's Transmission Service.
You don't have to look too far to find an honest, skilled, and friendly auto service center in your area. It's really simple. Just visit autoprosradio.com. All of the Auto Pros Radio's preferred service centers boast decades of experience and are dedicated to hiring, training, and keeping the most skilled automotive professionals in the industry and have a reputation for outstanding customer service. No matter where you are, go to autoprosradio.com to find a great automotive shop near you. Or check us out on Facebook at Auto Pros Radio. All right, welcome back to Auto Pros Radio Show. Give us a call, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-KCV. Let's run out and talk to Joe in Pearland. Joe, you're up.
Hey, hello. Good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Nice to talk to you.
Yes, sir. Good for you to call.
About a year ago, I called y'all when I was looking at getting a new vehicle and talked to y'all about Subarus and ended up getting a Subaru, 24 Subaru Outback, and loved the vehicle. Fantastic road car.
Right.
And took it in for normal maintenance here a couple weeks ago, oil change, checkup and that, at the dealer, part of the complimentary deal. And one of the things that they came back with at it, and I'm really kind of leery about this, I'm really wondering about it, they said that the driver's side rear shock was blown.
Okay.
And I don't know, and of course, it's covered up. It would be covered under warranty,
right?
But I'm not noticing anything different with the ride of the car or the handling, and I'm just wondering, how do I know for sure if I do have a blown shock?
Usually, you know, you get in there and look at it, and it'll be all
fluid.
Wet. It'll be wet, fluid leaking out of it.
See, that's what I thought. Yeah, from my old days in high school with my buddies' cars, you'd have oil running down the cylinder of the shock, and the photograph that they showed me of it, I did not see that on there.
Right. What kind of Subaru was it?
Outback.
Outback. It's a 24 Outback.
Is it a turbo or non-turbo?
It is the turbo.
Hey, Joe, I'm curious. How often are they recommending oil changes at the dealer with that maintenance package you have?
The complimentary one. And I mean, I've had it a year. I've got 24,000 miles on it, and this was the fourth oil change that I've... No, it's the fifth oil change that I've had.
That's good. So about every 5,000 miles. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm one of the, even with my wife's EcoBoost Explorer.
floor. I get that oil changed at least every 3,500 or 4,000 miles, even with that little turbo motor.
That's awesome, because, you know, some of the manufacturers end up on these 8, 9, 10,000 mile interval, and it's free, which is wonderful, but I really recommend if you happen to be on a plan like that, have it done in the interim as well. Pay for one in between, and then go get your free one at 10.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
As far as the shock goes, I mean, typically when they say it's a bad shock, it's because you see fluid leaking out of it. The picture they showed you, was it like something that's been wet and then like dirt kind of sticks to it, like dust or whatever?
It kind of looked like that up around where the two cylinders intersect.
Right.
It kind of looked like that up around that.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, like I said, there wasn't anything that was so obvious to me. And, of course, I was kind of – at the time, I didn't ask to go see it and actually physically see it.
Right.
But
I mean, have you got underneath there and looked at it yourself just to take a look at it? Or?
Not yet, and I'm going to. My next-door neighbor is a mechanic, and I want to get Andre – I want to ask him to come over. I want to crawl underneath there and actually take a look at it. Because the first thing I did when I got home was to try and look if there were any oil spots or anything on the garage floor and the driveway where I didn't park it.
Probably wouldn't leak that much.
Yeah. Typically it's not going to leak that much. But I will say that I want to say in the last few years I have seen more shocks leak, you know, fluid out than I've ever seen before for some reason.
Really?
Back to that parts problem.
And I'm not talking about Subaru. I'm talking about GM, Ford, Chrysler, across the board, you know.
Okay. Yeah, well, and like you said, you know, you were talking about parts problems and seeing parts problems. Of course, last year when we bought the car was when, you know, availability was fairly sparse, and we actually found the actual one that we wanted. The dealer had one on another lot and brought it in. We were fortunate, but again, you know, I'm thinking the same thing at the time of year that we bought it. Well, you know, it might have just been a bad piece.
Right. Yeah, as long as it's under warranty, I'd go ahead and get it replaced if they're saying it, because and, you know, let them do it, you know, but you may want to take a look at it. But I know in general shocks, if they're, you know, like around the top, like where the piston comes out of the body of the shock, that's what you're talking about, where the two pieces go together.
Correct.
You know, sometimes you'll see a little dust accumulate on there. I mean, and that's not a bad thing, but I mean, if it's liquid wet running down the shock, that's a problem.
Right.
But
okay.
I have a Denali that came in my shop this week. And it had the magnetic ride control on the front. Those things were so bad. I mean, there was literally like this gray mud stuff all accumulated at the top. And it's because it's all that magnetic, well, the magnetic fluid coming out of it. That's what it is. And he said this will be his third set that he's had. And those things, those things are like $1,500 a piece. I mean, they're not cheap at all.
Something to think about if you're out there car shopping, to don't buy into a system that's going to be a high maintenance issue.
Don't get the magnetic ride control.
Yeah. So.
Wow, unreal. Okay, well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. And I'll definitely get up underneath there this weekend just to double check it. And when they have a loaner available, I'm going to go ahead and take it in and have them swap it out.
Yeah, let us know how it comes out.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Give us a call, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-KSUV. Let's go to Arthur on the north side. Arthur, you're up.
Yes, sir. I've got an 01 Silverado V6, 160,000 miles. Replaced a fuel pump 10,000 miles ago at about 150, and spark plugs about that time. Right now, my fuel pressure is 55 pounds, and my code is a PO175, right bank, Rich Right Bank, I think it is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was just wondering what it might map airflow sensor, possibly.
Well,
also I don't drive it all the time, and I drove it recently, and I noticed that the temperature was the thermostat was stuck open, and I replaced it. Now the temperature is back up to like 195,
right,
where it should be.
Right.
So I just got that corrected.
So that's
where I am.
So when you look at that fuel pressure, so you got a fuel pressure gauge you're putting on it?
Yes, sir. Yes.
So when you put the gauge on there and you turn your key on, it pressures up to like 60 or 65, then settles down to 55?
Yes, sir. 65.
And does it hold that pressure for over a minute?
That I'm not sure of.
Because probably what you're going to find out if you put that on there and you turn the key on, it's probably going to go up, and then you're going to sit there and watch it, and it's going to bleed off real slow. Keep going down. Because the most common thing on that V6 is a bad fuel pressure regulator. And on that one, it's inside the intake manifold, if it's the style. I'm pretty sure it is. It's inside the intake manifold, and it'll be bleeding fuel into the cylinder, making it run rich. And typically, it'll hit both banks, and you could have both banks running rich. It's just that the other bank hadn't quite made it to the point of setting a code. So usually you can take and take a scan tool and look at your fuel trim, and you'll see that both sides are like way negative, like it's trying to cut the fuel back because it's just seeing too much fuel. But the key is put a fuel pressure gauge on there, watch the pressure and see if it holds the pressure. If it bleeds off right away, then nine out of 10 times it's a bad regulator that's leaking.
Okay.
And that regulator, the fuel pressure regulator is inside the intake manifold on that one. You can't see it externally. Typically what I do, if I see that pressure bleeds off like that, then I'll get somebody to hold the throttle plate open while I take a mirror and a flashlight, and I stick it down in there, and I shine the flight, and you can usually look back there, and you can see it in the back, and there's a little nipple sticking off of it, like where a vacuum line would normally go on, but since it's inside the intake manifold, you don't need a vacuum line. And you just watch that nipple. When somebody turns the key on, you'll usually see fuel, squirt out of that little nipple in there.
One other thing, it's hard to start.
That same thing. It's flooding. It's flooding the engine because when it sets, that fuel drips off into that intake, and especially on a hot engine, when that fuel hits in that intake, it vaporizes, and so it just fills that intake with fuel vapor. So that when you go to start it, it's like an extended crank. You got to clear it out before it'll start.
Yes. Well, what I will do is push down on the accelerator.
That's right.
About halfway, and then it'll start up right away.
Right. And what you're doing is you're diluting it out. You're giving it more air, so it dilutes it faster.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I can almost guarantee it's a 99.9% chance it's a bad regulator.
Okay. Have you got time for another question?
Sure. It's two for 1 hour.
This is two for one.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
I've got an 07 Camry, four cylinder, and the same coil keeps failing. I don't know which one. It's my son's vehicle, but he said he replaced two coils on the same cylinder. He didn't say which cylinder or anything like that. Is that a bad spark plug?
What you'd want to do is make sure it's got a good plug, that it's not a wore-out plug.
Or the wrong plug.
Yeah, because if a plug is worn out or a wrong plug or whatever, and it's requiring more voltage than normal to fire, then it'll just wear that coil out, nothing flat. The other thing you'd want to make sure of is that I'm assuming when you put a new coil on it, it runs fine until it goes bad.
Yes, sir. That's what he says.
Because the other thing usually sometimes you look for is sometimes a wiring harness will chafe somewhere and be touching the ground, and it'll be grounding that coil trigger wire, and it'll burn it up real quick. And the other thing is you got to make sure and buy a quality coil. You can't buy one of these house brand coils from ABC store. It's got to be a Denso or something like that came on there from the factory.
Okay. All right. That's what I need.
Harding. You're welcome.
Thank you, Mike.
You too.
Thanks, Arthur. Happy Easter. Yeah, back to parts problems.
Yeah. Give us a call, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-KSEV. Oh, I know. I tell you, just this week, I guess it was probably over a month ago or more, about a month and a half, ordered a ABS control module for a Dodge Charger. It's not even that old. It's like 2010 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not available. And then they're
That's
like,
crazy.
It's not available. And they said that, can't even place an order till like March 1st or something like that. And so, I called the guy, my parts guy, and said, be sure and order this when it becomes available. Well, yesterday it came in.
Wow. That's a long time.
Yeah. And so the box came, in fact, and I'm like, what's this? Right. And I opened it up and I go, oh, yeah.
I was waiting for that.
That's right.
Well, you know, the Silverado we were just talking with with Arthur about, that's the kind of repair that there's half a dozen different things that could cause it. Mm-hmm. And this is where I see customers come in and they've replaced half a dozen parts.
Right.
And none of them are what they really needed yet.
Right. But all those symptoms he described are classic bad regulator.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's got to be an air fuel issue in one form or fashion.
I mean, back in the day, I replaced a gazillion of those things.
2001 Silverado.
Yeah, that was the old, because on the 4.3, back then in 2001, it was the old spider injector setup, as people would always call it.
Mm-hmm.
And that regulator would always deteriorate and over time and start to leak and drip fuel in there. And it'd be hard to start, have a rich mixture. Usually, eventually, it would set up a misfire code on, like, number 6 or something like that.
So it dumps a bunch of fuel initially, and then it leans out?
Yeah, well, no, it just dumps a bunch of fuel in there. And it was the way it was situated in there, that one cylinder would suck the most into it. And it would cause a misfire code on one cylinder sometime, but you'd always get a rich code. And you always had that extended crank when you're trying to start it. You'd always have an extended crank because they just flood that intake, and it's just like a flooded car, you know, mm-hmm. just like an old carburetor flooded.
That's what I was thinking when he said he was holding that accelerator halfway down, is you've got to get the air coming in to get rid of the fuel.
I mean, you think about back in the day of the carburetor and how many times people would flood a car because they would pump it so much.
Right.
You know, and I just think about it just as a mechanic, because I'd always get in my car that did it, like back in the day, it still had a carburetor. You know, you get in there and you hit it twice.
Yeah, you had the system down for different cars.
Yeah.
I had an old Mustang, and you knew how many times to pump it, when to crank it. Mm-hmm. You know, it just had magic to it.
Right.
You had to have the magic formula to make that car start.
It's that voodoo magic, man. That's what it is. But, I mean, and how many carburetors I had that would come in running super rich, especially when they were cold. You know, people think they need a carburetor overhaul, and all they needed was a choke pull-off.
Right.
And, you know, one day, I forget when it was, I was looking, some car came in, and it was an older car, and I was like, wow, it's got a bad choke pull-off. And then I went to go try and find one. Man, can't even find them nowhere.
Hey, I got the little motorcycle back this week from George, who fixed that carburetor for me that I posted on Facebook a couple weeks ago.
What was it? I don't remember.
Oh, carburetor that was just ate up with ethanol.
Oh, yeah?
To the point that it ate through the brass on the petcock.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of carburetor was it on?
On my little dirt bike, my little two-stroke.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Which
should have had ethanol fuel in it. I apologize to the fuel gods for doing that to that little bike. So
what did I end up doing with it?
Just rebuild and a new petcock. Yeah, cleaned it out.
Yeah, I'll tell you, ethanol
runs like new.
Ethanol will destroy stuff, but hey, we're saving the environment. You know,
and burning more fuel, reducing our fuel economy while we're at it.
That's right. Burning more fuel. You wonder at what point is it a wash?
The last number I heard is that ethanol decreases your fuel economy by 20%.
Yeah, and that's about right. That's about right, especially if you
burn. So you're saving 10% of fuel because it's about 10%, right? 10-15%?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you're burning 20% more.
Yeah. I mean, that's I know people who burn E85. They talk about how much mileage it kills on them.
Ah.
You know? So, anyway, we're going to go back out here and take our last break. So, if you want to give us a call, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-KSEV. This is Auto Pros Radio here on 700 KSEV The Voice. We'll be right back.
Are you needing to have your vehicle's scheduled maintenance performed or mechanical repairs done? Don't wait. Go to autoprosradio.com, see all of our recommended preferred service centers in your area, and give them a call today to schedule an appointment to have your vehicle serviced and have that peace of mind your vehicle will be safe. And remember to tell your friends about the Auto Pros Radio Show every Saturday, 10 to noon, here on AM 700 KSEV.
David's Auto Central in Stafford has been performing quality automotive service and preventive maintenance for over 35 years. Their technicians are ASC certified and trained to handle all your automotive needs. From air conditioning, brakes, electrical repairs, diagnostic service, engine repairs, and much more. Let the fine folks at David's Auto Central take care of your automotive needs. Located at 2526 Fifth Street in Stafford. That's 281-499-9684. That's 281-499-9684. David's Auto Central.
Green and White Automotive has been servicing Spring and surrounding areas since 1977. Their ASC certified technicians will diagnose and repair both import and domestic vehicles and back those repairs with a 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty. Now that is peace of mind. Do you have a diesel truck? No problem. Green and White Automotive is your local diesel expert. They understand your time is valuable and will get you back on the road in a timely manner. And they also have a free shuttle service to work or home. Automotive repair and maintenance service all at a fair price. Give them a call today. 281-353-7682. That's Green and White Automotive, 281-353-7682.
Beckwith Car Care has been servicing the Humboldt, Atascocita, and surrounding areas for more than 35 years. You don't stay in business that long without providing great customer service and repairs done right the first time. Beckwith has factory-trained technicians that know how to diagnose and repair your vehicle. They provide a nationwide 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty, free shuttle service to work, home, or play. They also can arrange to pick up your vehicle if needed. Visit Beckwith.com and schedule an online appointment today to have your vehicle repaired or maintenance services performed. Give them a call, 281-540-2000. That's 281-540-2000. Beckwith's Car Care.
Thank you for joining us this weekend on the Auto Pros Radio Show. Online, you can find us everywhere on Facebook at Auto Pros Radio. All of our shows, in case you missed one, and links to Auto Pros approved repair shops all over town, you can find it at autoprosradio.com. Shops you can trust are just a click away. You can always email us, info at autoprosradio.com, and be sure to tell your friends to tune in Saturday mornings, 10 to noon. Welcome back to Auto Pros Radio on AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas. I'm Lynn Beckwith with Beckwith's Car Care, and I'm here with Robert Gruner with Auto Tektronics and Katie.
Yes, ma'am.
And we are here to help you with the trials and tribulations of driving a vehicle in this rather odd climate we have here in Houston, Texas.
Hot, cold.
We are a severe climate area. And when you look at your maintenance requirements for your vehicle, whether it's old or new, you need to look at the most severe
schedule for the maintenance. Yeah, I'm telling
absolutely.
You. I know. I'm tired of the cold. Just by the time I think it's gone, I wake up and I go, man.
It was kind of cool this morning, but it's going to be almost 80 by the time we walk out the door from the studio here in a few minutes. Which you don't have too much more time to call in, y'all.
Yeah. One morning when I got up, I forget Monday or Tuesday or whatever, it was 49. I was like, God. That way you're done with this.
I know. I wish we could just set the thermostat to about 65 or 70, yeah. Like right in that range. It can vary 5 or 6 degrees. I'm all right with that.
Yeah, because I know it's coming. This summer, it's coming.
Oh, it is. It is. You know, I broke down yesterday, though, and turned the heater on my pool.
Oh, yeah.
Because I knew today was going to be hot enough that you could actually get in the water, get back out of the water, and not freeze. So hopefully.
So you're trying to take the chill off of it?
Yeah, I figured I'd do a little swimming this afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Pool party at Lynn's.
Pool party at Lynn's. Everybody come by. Open bar.
There you go.
That's right. And if you don't like the pool, you can get in the lake.
There you go.
And the lake is probably not warm.
Oh, I bet it's cold. You know, I saw jet skiers out there yesterday, and thought, it's too cold for jet skiing just yet.
Yeah.
Or the water would be too cold anyway.
And, you know, the only time I've been on a jet ski, I was down in Key West, and we were in a group of us. Mm-hmm. They were going on like a jet ski tour or whatever you want to call it. And I remember we were going all the way around this island we were on.
Yeah.
I guess it was Key West. We were going all the way around Key West. And I can remember, and it was a turbocharged model. I mean, it had a lot of power. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we got out where you were, like, on this long open stretch.
Oh, so you got on it.
And, I mean, it was just beating me to death. I mean, it was kind of choppy.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to get them to plane out.
Yeah. You know, and, I mean, it was like, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, man, how can anybody do this all day?
Where's the fun, right?
I was so glad to get to the end of that tour. I was like, whew. Man, I mean, I was wore out, man.
You would have used less energy on a kayak.
Oh, I'm telling you, man. I mean, it was just beating me to death. I couldn't stand it, you know. And I was like, how's this fun?
Not what you expect in the water, right?
No. All right, let's run out and talk to Ray in the Woodlands. Ray, you're on Auto Pros Radio.
Hey, my question is, the lady there was talking about old Mustangs and Fords. Those used to be my fun cars, but I recently got a 2012 Cadillac CTS. And so my question is, every time the engine light comes on these newer vehicles, are you going to have to plan on spending $1,000 or more to get it, try to get it fixed, but still not fixed? And so I'm going to ask you, what is the approach on some of this stuff?
Well, it shouldn't be $1,000. I mean, depending on the code, I mean, that kind of dictates which way you're going to go, you know, and look for stuff.
Yeah, that gets you into the right system, and then you have to figure out what's actually happening in that system.
And usually one of the most expensive codes on, like, that 3.6 is if you start having valve timing correlation issues, because that 3.6 was known for that. And part of the problem was people would go by the light that said when you're supposed to change your oil.
Right.
And they had that light set for too long. Like, they had them set 8,000-9,000 miles.
Okay.
And it would chew up all the guides, and because the guides are plastic. Chains running across the top of it. And, of course, when the oil's dirty, it's just like it has grit in it. And so it's just like you're sandpapering those guides to pieces. Uh-huh. And so when they would go, so like, say the guides would wear out, the chain that changes, like, the diameter of the chain, per se, you could say, where it runs. And so then you'd get a correlation code, because it'd be out of time. And the only way to fix it would be to replace the chain, the guides, the gears, everything, to put everything back to where it was. And then what they would do is they'd say, oh, well, we got to do this reflash that fixes that. Well, what the reflash did was it shortened that oil change interval down to 5,000 miles.
Okay.
You know?
So the first code I got was P0191. Fuel rail is not receiving apparently correct info. Drove it a few days. Engine light went out after I replaced the battery. Then came back on, got a code again from O'Reilly, and it's something about the number 2 downline oxygen sensor. Got that replaced, and they told me you got to drive it 200 or 300 miles to clear that code.
Yeah.
So what does that really mean?
Yeah, that's not true. What was that first code you got?
191.
191, which I understand is pretty common in GM.
Fuel rail pressure sensor performance.
Yeah. Yes.
On certain
it's because the rail pressure sensor is not a super common one for that. If it's a 191, it's not real super common for that. But what I will tell you is, on the driving it to get the code to go away, what you have to do is you have to look up what the drive cycle is for that.
Right.
And because most of the time when I'm trying to get monitors to run a drive cycle, like, I can do it and usually about 10 miles.
Okay.
Because when you look up the drive cycle on most of those GMs, it'll tell you to drive it. You start it up, you let it idle for 2 or 3 minutes, then you take off driving it, you get on the freeway at 55, drive for 6 minutes at 55.
Stop it so many times, for so many seconds.
Yeah, and what it would tell you to do is you drive it for 6 minutes, and then you'd gradually let it come to a stop. You would come to a stop with your foot on the brake, you apply the parking brake, and you let it sit there, you know, in gear with the parking brake on for 2 minutes.
Okay.
And then it usually would run dang near every monitor on there. Usually the only one you might not get would be the EVAP. But if you do a cold start and you make sure you have about a half a tank of gas.
Okay.
And then when you start it up and let it sit there and idle for 2 minutes or 3 minutes, a lot of times it'll run that EVAP test on some of the models, some of the makes and models. You have to, like I say, you have to look and see what is the criteria for the driving trace.
Okay.
And because some of them run that EVAP test when it sets overnight and cools down, it runs the EVAP test. So, I mean, it just depends on the make and model of the car, and you got to look it up. But it has a lot less to do with mileage, a whole lot to do with how you drive it.
Okay.
So,
Mr. Google will give you a good drive cycle you can follow.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's usually a good place to look and get an idea. Of course, I'll look on all data and see exactly what the factory says for it. And a lot of times it's hard to drive it exactly the way it says just because of traffic and whatnot.
Yeah.
But you try and get it as close as you can. Mm-hmm. And typically, I mean, like I say, if you do it from a cold start and you have the right amount of fuel in the tank, and that's critical because that is what is going to determine if that evap monitor is going to run. And a lot of times, if the evap monitor doesn't run, it blocks other monitors from running. So, I mean, anytime I've got one, I'm trying to get to run, I make sure it's got to have tank fuel.
So the evap thing you're talking about, is that what you hear when you say remote start it and you're standing outside and you hear something in the back run for a few seconds?
That depends on the car. Now, on your GM, it uses a purge solenoid up on the intake manifold to pull a vacuum on the tank, so you're not going to hear anything, and it's not going to do it unless the car is running. Now, on some cars, they have what's called a leak detection pump. A lot of Toyotas have it, and you'll actually hear this little pump run. A lot of BMWs have them, and you'll hear them run sometimes. Volkswagens and stuff, you'll hear them run.
Okay.
So, I mean, it just depends on the make and model of the car. Chryslers do what they call a natural vacuum leak detection method. And what that does is when it sets overnight, and if the system is sealed, and when it cools down, of course, everything shrinks, so it should create a slight vacuum on the system. And there's a little switch in this eSIM module that's on there, and when it sees just a slight vacuum, it closes that switch and it lets it know, hey,
everything's good.
Everything's good. You know, and it passes the monitor. So I mean, it just depends on the make and model of the car. I mean, they're all different.
Wow, they didn't make it any simpler for us, did they?
Yeah.
There's an analogy about doctors only having to work on two different models, and mechanics have to work on several dozen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But. Anyway, what you can do is when people say go drive it 100 miles, whatever, they're just assuming that in that 100 miles, you're going to hit all the points, you know, while you're driving it, you know.
Yeah.
But if you go and look up the actual cycle, you can do it a lot quicker than that.
And those two issues you had are probably very unrelated to each other, I would think, the 191 and then the oxygen sensor.
All right.
Okay. So then for those of us who are knowledgeable, would you – advise to get your own repair manual and one of those little code readers yourself and try to figure this stuff out, or
it might be cheaper just let somebody diagnose it.
Code readers are kind of generic. The ones you're going to want to pay for are very generic, and you're not going to necessarily get all the data or have the ability to control some of the different things in the vehicle to really fine-tune and pinpoint the diagnosis.
And trouble codes are not part numbers.
No.
There's
zip codes. There's zip codes.
They just put you in the zip code. That's right.
Right. Okay, I got you. Well, my closest shop that y'all talk about is Green and White, so I'm sure they would be able to handle
that. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, no problem. Ray.
Okay.
All righty.
All right, sir. Well, I appreciate y'all's program. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Ray.
All right, let's go to David Waller. David, you're up.
Well, good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Hey, guys, I got a 2008 Dodge Dakota RT V8 of 120,000 miles on it. And I've had it used as a used vehicle. I bought it about 2.5 years ago. It's always had this shimmy at 65 miles per hour and goes away when it hits 70. With balanced tires, new tires. Done stuff on the front end.
Right.
Don't know where to go from this point. Hoping it's not something like transmission, but I guess it could be.
But when you say a shimmy, do you feel it in the steering wheel?
No, I feel it more in my seat than I do in the steering wheel. Yeah.
And at what speed do you start to feel it?
It kind of builds itself up from 60 miles an hour, and 65 seems to be the apex. And then it will go away when I start approaching 70. I could run this thing at 90 miles an hour and be smooth as silk.
Okay. Let me ask, so that should have a cylinder deactivation on it, where it cuts it down to four cylinders sometimes?
I'm not aware if it does that.
Well, I know some of the chargers and stuff did like that.
Yeah.
And I know that when you get over 70, it cuts that off. because I had one come in one time that had a problem, and it would always go away when it went over 70, and that's because that's when the cylinder deactivation would turn off.
I would think an RT might do that.
Yeah. And
And
so sometimes when you have that cylinder deactivation, if you have a bad motor mount, when it goes into that deactivation mode, man, it'll vibrate the whole car.
Okay.
Because I know Suburbans and stuff that have the cylinder deactivation do that. You know, I'll feel it when it goes into – and on those, I can watch on the – I don't know if yours – on the Suburbans, you know, it has a thing where it tells you when it's in V8, when it's in V4. And so
I don't have anything like that, at least not display.
Yeah, and when I would – so what you might want to do is when you're driving and you feel this, if you keep your foot on the gas and you lightly touch the brake, does it quit?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Try that.
I'll test that out.
Yeah, test that out and see, because if you touch that brake, it's going to take it out of four-cylinder mode.
Okay.
And if it does, if you can sit there and touch that, because it'll take it out of four-cylinder mode, it'll also disengage the torque converter clutch. So you could have a torque converter clutch shimmying.
Gotcha.
You know, so that'd be the two things I'd look at. If it's not an in-the-wheel thing, like a tire balance, you're not feeling like a tire, then I'd be looking at either a torque converter clutch that's shuttering, or if it's when it's in four-cylinder mode.
Okay. Sounds good. It gives me a direction to go in.
All right. Well, let me know what you find out.
All right. Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Bye.
All right, Scott. Talk to Rick and Tomball. Got him a 4Runner. Rick, you're up.
Hey, this is Rick. I talked to y'all just a minute ago about my Bronco, but I had a problem with my 4Runner. I solved it and fixed it, and I thought maybe your listeners, if they had this problem, they won't do what I did first and replace the charcoal canister.
All right.
I bought a 2022 used 4Runner, got a really good deal on it, and they gave me a full tank of gas. They followed me home. Anyway, the next day I decided I was going to fill the tank so I could check my gas mileage and brim it, and it was kickback. Every time you tried to put gas in, you had to go real slow. It kept spitting back.
Right.
I checked, looked at the forums and everything. So finally, I went down and bought charcoal canister for about $375. Mm-hmm. That still didn't work. Mm-hmm. Checked some more. It was the rollover valve in the gas tank. So I took the hose off of the gas tank, jacked the car up real good, and I got me a mirror to look down in that little bitty deal kind of on your backside. I got a screwdriver, and I started beating in there, and I popped that valve back, solved my problem. Rollover valve.
Yeah, I mean, that can cause it. If you have a valve that's stuck, kind of, it'll do that.
Of course, a brand-new tank is what, because you can't replace it.
Right, it's part of the tank.
Over $1,000.
There you go.
Well, and a lot of people do damage those charcoal canisters by overfilling their tank, by topping off at the pump. So that's probably why you saw so much on the forums about the canister.
Right. And I still don't know if somebody maybe, I don't know, when they filled it up at the dealership that I bought it from, I got it for $30,000. It had 48,000 miles. Maybe they knew this problem was going on. Or maybe when the sales guy went and brimmed it, maybe he kept pumping it, maybe it made that valve close. I don't know what makes that valve.
Yeah.
I mean, if you roll the car over, it's supposed to close.
Yeah. All right, Rick, we're up against the end of the show. Thanks for the information. Okay. We'll take note of that. Thanks, everybody, for calling in. Thanks for being here, Lynn.
Happy driving, y'all.
And everybody out there, have a happy Easter. We'll see you next weekend.
Thanks for listening to the Auto Pros Radio Show. Hey, if you need help during the week, go to our website, autoprosradio.com. Or if you need your car serviced, see all of our recommended preferred service centers in your area. Check out our Facebook page at autoprosradio.com for the latest posts on what's going on in the automotive industry. Share a comment with us and tell your friends about the Auto Pros Radio Show every Saturday, 10 to noon, here on AM 700, KSEV, the voice of Texas.